Hey everyone, welcome to AI Special Report. I'm Skylar Monroe. I run an AI research lab at a FANG company, and this is where I break down the biggest stories in AI so you don't have to wade through the noise alone. Huge thanks to our sponsors keeping this show running. Ada, helping businesses integrate AI into their workflows. Ago Consulting, that's Ago, your go-to for silicon development from AI all the way to SOAC. And Zen Semiconductor, an umbrella company with a serious portfolio of silicon industry companies, including Ada for deploying AI at scale, and their Glow Accelerator makes AI models run faster and cheaper. Which honestly, who doesn't want that? Today we've got a packed episode. We're talking about automation's surprising effect on wages, a climate startup flipping consumer research on its head, Salesforce going all in on Slack as an AI agent, some exciting news out of MIT, and the OpenAI versus Anthropic race that has pretty much everyone in the industry either excited or terrified. Let's get into it. All right, kicking things off with a story from MIT AI News that honestly hits a little close to home for a lot of people in the workforce right now. MIT economists have published research finding that when U.S. companies deploy automation, they're not just randomly automating whatever's easiest, they're strategically targeting workers who earn what researchers call a wage premium. And if you're not familiar with that term, a wage premium basically means workers who are earning more than the pure market rate for their skills, often because they're in a unionized role or a long-tenured position or a job that historically had some bargaining power attached to it. So the finding here is that automation is being used, at least in part, as a tool to bring those wages down. Companies see a worker who's earning, say, 15 or 20% above what the market baseline would suggest, and they think, okay, can a machine or a software system do enough of this job that we can restructure the role, reduce headcount, or renegotiate compensation? And the answer, increasingly, is yes. Now here's what I find really striking about this research, and this is the part that should make us all sit up. The study found that this approach increases inequality but does not necessarily increase productivity. Let me say that again, because it's important. Companies are disrupting workers' livelihoods and compressing wages, and the productivity gains they're supposed to be chasing? Often not materializing in any meaningful way. So this isn't even a clean trade-off, where society gets cheaper goods or faster services in exchange for displaced workers. In many cases, it's just a wealth transfer, from labor to capital. From an AI research perspective, this is one of those findings that really underscores why the conversation around automation can't just be a technical one. We can talk all day about model architectures and inference speeds, and we do on this show, but the deployment decisions, the strategic choices companies make about where to point these tools, that's where the real societal impact lies. Automation isn't neutral. It gets aimed at things by people for reasons. And this research is giving us clearer data on what those reasons actually are. The implications for practitioners and leaders listening, and I know a lot of you are in decision-making seats, is that the ROI calculations on automation projects need to be more honest. If your automation initiative isn't delivering productivity gains, if the main benefit is wage suppression, that's going to show up eventually in culture, in attrition, in public perception. The MIT research is a signal that we need better frameworks for evaluating what automation is actually accomplishing and for whom. Really important work coming out of that team. Okay, let's shift gears to something a little different. A story from TechCrunch AI about a company called Northwind Climate. And honestly, I love this one because it's a great example of AI being used to challenge assumptions rather than just reinforce them. So Northwind Climate is a climate-focused research firm, and they set out to answer a question that sounds simple but turns out to be genuinely complicated. Who are climate-conscious consumers? The conventional approach to that question, and you've seen this everywhere in market research, is to slice people into demographic buckets: age, income, education level, political affiliation. The assumption being that climate-conscious consumers look a certain way. They're young, they're college-educated, they're in certain zip codes, they vote a certain way. You know the profile. It's been used for years to target green marketing campaigns, to design sustainable product lines, to decide which communities get outreach. Northwind Climate threw that playbook out the window. Instead of relying on demographics, they used AI to analyze survey responses for behavioral clues, things like how people talk about trade-offs, how they describe their own purchasing habits, how they reason about the future versus the present. And what they found was that climate-conscious consumers are not who you'd expect. The demographic assumptions? Largely wrong, or at least wildly incomplete. This is a really powerful demonstration of what good AI-assisted research can do. When you let the model find the signal in the actual behavior and language rather than imposing pre-existing categories, you get a much more textured picture of reality. Demographics are proxies. They're shortcuts that sometimes work and sometimes lead you completely astray. Behavioral and linguistic signals are much closer to the thing you actually care about. For anyone working in consumer AI recommendation systems, marketing tech, or personalization, this is a case study worth paying attention to. The insight isn't just about climate consumers. The methodological lesson is broadly applicable. If your segmentation model is built on demographic assumptions, you might be systematically misidentifying the people you're trying to reach. Northwind's approach suggests a better path. Start with behavior, let the AI surface the patterns, and be willing to be surprised by what it finds. I'm really curious to see this methodology applied in other domains because I think the results would be equally eye-opening. All right, now on to one of the bigger product stories of the week, this one from VentureBeat AI. And it's about Salesforce making a very bold move in the workplace AI space. Salesforce just launched a completely rebuilt version of Slackbot, and I mean rebuilt from the ground up. This isn't a patch or an upgrade. They've transformed what was essentially a notification bot into what they're calling a fully powered AI agent. And that distinction matters enormously. The new Slackbot can search across enterprise data, draft documents, and, this is the key part, take action on behalf of employees. That's the agent piece. It's not just retrieving information and surfacing it, it's doing things. And it's now generally available to Business Plus and Enterprise Plus customers, which means this is hitting production environments at scale right now, not sitting in some beta waitlist. To understand why this is a big deal, you have to zoom out and look at the battlefield. Microsoft has Copilot deeply integrated into Teams and the entire Office 365 ecosystem. Google has Gemini woven into Workspace. Both of them have been making the case that their AI assistant is the one that should sit at the center of how your organization works. Salesforce is saying no, it's Slack. And with this relaunch, they're putting serious weight behind that argument. What Salesforce has going for it here is the CRM data advantage. Slack, connected to Salesforce's broader platform, has access to customer data, sales pipeline information, service records, the kind of structured enterprise data that makes an AI agent actually useful in a business context rather than just a general-purpose chatbot. If you're a sales rep and you can ask Slackbot to pull up the latest on a deal, draft a follow-up based on the CRM history, and schedule a next step, all without leaving Slack, that's genuinely compelling. The challenge for Salesforce is distribution and habit. Microsoft and Google have the operating system and the productivity suite. Their AI is baked into tools people are already using 8 hours a day. Salesforce has to make Slack itself indispensable enough that it becomes that hub. The new Slackbot is their best argument yet that Slack can be the command center for work. Whether enterprises buy that argument over the next 12 months is going to be one of the more interesting storylines in enterprise AI to watch. I'll be keeping a close eye on adoption numbers. Okay, a quick but genuinely cool story from MIT AI News. MIT has appointed Justin Solomon as Associate Dean of Engineering Education. Solomon is a faculty member in electrical engineering and computer science, and his mandate is going to be focused on innovation in engineering education and new pedagogical approaches. In other words, how do we actually teach the next generation of engineers better? Now, why am I covering this on an AI show? Because the intersection of AI and education is one of the most consequential areas we're going to be navigating as an industry over the next decade. The pace of change in AI is frankly outrunning the ability of traditional education systems to keep up. Curricula that were cutting edge 3 years ago are already partially obsolete. The tools, the frameworks, the conceptual foundations, they're all shifting under our feet. MIT putting dedicated leadership focus on rethinking how engineering education works is a meaningful signal. And Solomon is a great choice for this. He's not just an educator, he's a researcher who works at the intersection of geometry, graphics, and machine learning. He understands the technical landscape in a deep way, which means he's not going to propose pedagogical reforms that are disconnected from where the field is actually going. The question of how we teach AI, not just the mechanics of training models, but the ethics, the systems thinking, the ability to reason about second and third order effects. That's increasingly urgent. The practitioners coming out of universities right now are going to be building systems that affect millions of people. Getting the education right matters enormously. So I'm genuinely excited to see what Solomon does in this role. MIT has the resources and the talent density to pioneer approaches that other institutions will eventually adopt. Worth watching. And finally, let's close with the big picture story. This one from Wired AI, and the headline kind of says it all. Everyone is freaking out about OpenAI and Anthropic's race for dominance. And look, that's not hyperbole. The AI research community is genuinely anxious right now about the pace of development and what it means. The core tension in this story is one we talk about a lot on this show, but it's reaching a new intensity. Researchers, and not just the critics, but people inside leading labs are raising flags about whether the field is moving too fast to adequately understand what it's building. Every few months, there's a new capability jump, a new benchmark shattered, a new model that does things the previous one couldn't. And the concern is that our ability to evaluate these systems, to understand their failure modes, to align them with human values, is not keeping pace with the capability gains. Then you've got Mark Zuckerberg weighing in, and his concern is a different flavor of the same anxiety. He's worried about concentration of ownership. Who controls the most powerful AI systems? Right now, it's a very small number of organizations. OpenAI and Anthropic are in a head-to-head race, both burning enormous capital, both making significant capability claims, and both operating in a regulatory environment that is still very much figuring itself out. Meta's push into open-source AI is partly Zuckerberg's answer to that concentration problem, the argument being that open models distribute power more broadly. There's also a fascinating subplot in this story about Black Forest Labs, the team behind the Flux image generation models, and their push into robotics. Which is interesting because it signals that some of the most capable generative AI teams are starting to look at physical world applications. Robotics is one of those domains where AI capabilities could translate into enormous real-world impact very quickly, and it's attracting serious talent. My take on all of this? The freaking out is partly warranted and partly noise. The capability gains are real. I see them in our lab work every week. The concerns about pace and alignment are legitimate and deserve serious resourcing, not dismissal. But the doom narrative can also become its own distraction. The most useful thing practitioners can do right now is stay technically grounded, engage seriously with safety and evaluation research, and push their organizations to make thoughtful deployment decisions rather than just racing to ship. The OpenAI Anthropic competition is going to push the frontier forward regardless. Our job is to make sure the surrounding ecosystem tooling, evaluation, governance keeps up. That's the work. All right, that's a wrap on today's episode of AI Special Report. 5 stories, a lot to think about, from wage dynamics and climate research to Slack's big AI bet, MIT's education push, and the OpenAI Anthropic rivalry that's got the whole industry buzzing. AI Special Report, brought to you by Ada, Ago Consulting, and Zen Semiconductor, seriously great sponsors who are building real things in this space. Go check them out. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd highly recommend checking out Unzip, another great show in the Ada Podcast Network that this audience is going to love. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Share this with someone who needs to stay sharp on AI and check the link in show notes for more details on everything we covered today. I'll see you next time.